Good afternoon, Mr. Brewski. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. So what do you say when when you're called for a unnecessary roughness, late hit, 15-yard penalty? What do you go back and what do you go back and say to your guys? First of all, what do you say to the officials and what do you say to your guys?
Well, I think the guys see the play and they know if it was warranted or not, and they can give you those they'll come on mans or something like that. What are you doing or something like that? But I think the guys pretty much saw me try to let up towards the end. I mean, I think it was a little bit out of bounds, but I let up, and then I don't even think Ronnie went down on that one. So, you know, after the flag was thrown, you sort of plead your case to the official, and you see a little bit of a doubt in his eyes, but he threw the flag, and it's too late, and you see him staring at your number. And then you think to yourself, maybe you should have gotten more out of it.
You really pop him.
A little bit more.
Well, it's only sport, so, really. You think about it. You argue with an umpire, he's never changing the call. NBA, they never change the call. Once in a while in the NFL, they'll pick up the flag. Once in a while.
Yeah, I've been right in those discussions in between officials, and there's two of them there, and you plead your case in there, and it's a rarity, but I've seen the tide turn a little bit sometimes to where one official said something and the other official doesn't agree. All right, did you have a better view? And then the flag gets picked up or the flag stays. So, you know, they do a good job of working it out, I think, but I think when you come home and your wife tells you, yeah, Teddy, you hit him out of bounds. So it's like, what are you going to do? I'm like, but babe, he didn't even go down. It's 3 yards.
So you can't
three
argue
yards,
with honey, her.
3 yards.
So she said definitely it was out of bounds.
She's
huh?
like, oh, yeah, you hit him late.
No, that's funny. Now, what we were trying to figure this out off the air, you won't believe this, okay? The quarterbacks in NFL history who have thrown for back-to-back 400-yard games, we got Dan Marino.
Mm-hmm.
We got Phil Simms.
Yeah, we know one.
We didn't get Dan Fouts. That's one.
That's
okay.
One you should have.
How about the fourth one? You'll never get this one. You'll never get it. Not a great quarterback. Billy Volek.
Really?
Billy Volek.
He was the last one who did it, isn't he?
Billy Volek.
In Tennessee or somewhere to do that.
Yep.
Actually, I wouldn't have got Simms either. I mean, you didn't think of Simms as 400-yard
exactly. Defense, running game.
Right. Yeah.
And they never really had great receivers there with the Giants. Good tight ends, but not great receivers. What do you think of Matt Castle's development over the course of this season?
It's been incredible. I mean, I think I've said this year a bunch. I mean, we let them know we're behind you, Matt. Now just improve every week. And did you expect that improvement to be back-to-back 400-plus yard passing games? No, probably not. But to see him take it this far you're watching a player sort of seize his opportunity. Really take advantage. You always talk about taking advantages of opportunities, and this is a prime example of it. I mean, in terms of playing experience, what did he really have? You know, I mean, high school. And so I think it's got to be one of the best stories I've heard in recent memory. I mean, you talk about the Kurt Warner thing coming in and from stacking grocery store shelves or something like that to playing quarterback the way he did. But Matt, to not have a lot of experience, to come out, and it just shows you that through hard work and determination for all those young kids out there, I mean, it's possible to just keep on working, and when your chance comes, you really got to take advantage of it, and that's what Matt's done.
We were saying earlier, if Pete Carroll doesn't use this as a recruiting pitch, he has lost his opportunity.
You can
come here, and guess what? Even if you don't play, you can get to the league. It's happened.
He can pull that Matt Castle card out of his back pocket, I mean, in a living room, and really sell it, I think, too. I mean, and whenever – gosh, say it. But coach, you've got this guy who's starting and he's done all this and all that. Bam, Matt Castle card here. Play it, you know. So
now you're a veteran, you're a captain, you're a Pro Bowler, you're a Super Bowl champion. You probably would get a little leeway here. If Bill Belichick said, get Brewski off the field, and you said, no, I'm not coming.
Oh.
what would happen here?
You know, that's... Man, there. I remember an instance once. I think we were playing the Jets here a while back, and there was a play where I hit Curtis Martin. I hit Curtis Martin, and my helmet sort of popped up off of my head, and I sort of threw it off, and it went on the ground. And then, you know, that's sort of a sign of a loss of composure, and Belichick sent somebody in to get me out. And then that's the one time when I probably wanted to just say whoever it was coming out just to get back in. But, you know, still you gotta put that helmet on and get off. And I heard about you talking about the instance out there, and so
Joey Porter says, no, I'm not
leaving.
I'm
not coming off.
You know, You can go on and on when you talk about Joey Porter, what he says.
You will never be on our level. That's still my favorite one. You guys will never be on our level.
Come on. What do they got in there? Come on, man. What are you doing? You know, but, you know, that's not us. That's not us. We hope that we don't have veteran players that set that example. But, you know, in the heat of the moment, a lot of things can happen out there.
How tough is it? Because I'm sure throughout the course of a season, throughout the course of a game, there are many times a player says something just to get you to react. How tough is it on a weekly basis to maintain that composure?
There's sort of an unwritten code out there, okay? I mean, I've talked trash before. You know, a lot of things can be said out there, and there's a wide spectrum of words that can be used. And, you know, there are certain things that you usually keep it to. There's sort of an unwritten code. Okay, you can say anything you want about this play, about last play, about playing abilities, about, you know, I've been called many things out there. But when you cross that line and go over to some other areas, I think that's when a spark can really detonate in somebody. And sometimes, you know, somebody's got to pay for it.
So basically, don't talk about my family.
Yeah, there are things, I mean, family, personal issues, any type of, there are a lot of things that, you know, I can say some things like, say to some lineman out there, I can go get up in his face and say something right up in his face, but it's in the heat of battle. After the game, I'll walk to that 50 and we shake each other's hands and say, good game, that was good, hit that one play or something like that. But some lines can't be crossed, and if that, I can tell you the truth, if a certain line was crossed with me, I don't know how I'd react either. If something was said that maybe was out of line, I mean, it's sometimes it's tough to keep your composure in certain situations.
You know, just the way things work out, our Patriots Monday guys are defensive guys, and you and Richard and Ty and Vince. And our Patriots Friday guys, for the most part, are offensive guys, like Matt Light, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's the offensive guys who had to listen to the most crap on the field. Because I get the impression, talking to Richard and Vince, that the offensive players didn't get too out of line with the stuff that was being said out there.
You're talking yesterday.
Right.
Right.
Just yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of ourselves defensively, we don't consider Miami a huge trash talking team. There's a little bit that goes out every single game, you know, and I think if you look at sides of the ball, mostly the trash talkers are on defense. You know, they're the ones that are trying to, you know, get that intimidation factor out there, try to get in people's heads, because there's a lot of things going on that offense side of the ball. And I think offensive players maybe need to keep their composure a little bit more than defensive players need to do. We can let it go a little bit. We're the ones out there trying to deliver hits and not take them. So I think we have a little bit more time to think of some things to say and let them out.
Who was the best trash talker you ever played with?
Oh, the best trash talker I ever played with. Oh. That's a tough one.
I got a name in my head. I wonder if you're gonna say this guy's name.
That's a tough one. You know, in terms of rhetoric and intelligence and delivery, you know, I think Mike Vrabel's gotta be up there.
Yeah.
I think he's up there. I think Hot Rod was always
that's the name I had in my
was
head.
Always an intimidating yeah. force when he'd hit somebody or let somebody know about it. And you know, there I mean, numerous. I can go back 5-10 years or something like that. But I think in recent memory, those are two that really stand out to me.
See, my name was Brian Cox.
Yeah, yeah. Had a short stint with Brian, and
he was pretty good too.
Yeah, he was. And I think he was a player also, antics sometimes to fans and something like that. Maybe going overboard a little bit, but he was a very intense individual also.
See the guys like Vrabel are dangerous because they can get down and dirty and talk trash with you. Or you can do that highbrow intellectual trash talking where they're talking over your head. You're like, it's so, he's saying something about me. It's bad. I really don't even understand exactly what it is. I just know it's not complimentary.
No, there are times when I'll tap Rave after a play. I tap Raves after a play, and he's still in there. Hey, Raves, calm down. But that was a good one, man. That was a good one.
Now, wait a minute.
You will never be Drew Brees.
You told me that.
They know it. You know it.
Oh, man. That's
and
the
they
classic.
Know it.
Well, wait a minute. You told me you don't even have to go to class at Ohio State. How can he be highbrow intellectual?
That's right. It's football. It was just what he had his experience on the football field. You think he learned that in the classroom? We don't go to classes. We don't want athletes. We don't want academics here. We want athletes. But how do your coaches respond? Let's say Dean Pease, in Belichick, how would they respond? You gave a very good explanation. Sometimes you do cross that line and it's tough. Or players will cross the line, which will force you to respond. How do they respond to that answer if you are, say, ejected from a game or you're flagged for a penalty? Do they accept that?
Well, I haven't been in that situation before. I don't know how it went with Matt, but I would think it would go like this somehow. I'd get in an altercation. I'd get in a fight to where an official would throw me out the game and he'd do the thumb ejection from the game number 54. And then I'd come over to the sideline and my coaches will say to you, Teddy, what happened out there? What'd you do that for? And I'd say, well, coach, he said this. And I would think it would be enough for my coaches to say, okay. Did you get some punches in?
Did you do and, okay?
You know, so, I mean, I think they understand also. I mean, there's some places you don't go. You know, I'll say that again. And I think, I don't know if I was in the same situation. I mean, of course, I wasn't out there, and we can't go over directly what was said or words or anything like that. Of course, we talked amongst ourselves as teammates. But, you know, I think in a situation like that, it would have taken all of my self-control to compose myself.
How much self-control do you have out on the field?
I like to think I have a lot.
Yeah.
I like to think I have a lot. I think a few years ago in Tennessee, I went ballistic out there one time when I thought Bobby Wade cut down Rodney Harrison a little bit low.
Yep.
And I thought it was something where he went high and then looked Rodney in the eye and then he went down low. And, you know, I went over to Rodney and I said, Rodney, what happened? And Rodney looked at me and he said, Teddy, you cut me. And that just snapped something in me into where I sort of went over to the bench and I was sort of going ballistic, you know, a word that I could use again. I mean, I was just going off, and I think that was a situation where that's one instance where I lost self-control, but I consider myself someone that doesn't do that often.
It's one of my favorite stories. You ain't no Wildcat, Teddy. Bobby Wade, Arizona Wildcat, said to Teddy, you ain't no Wildcat,
you
Teddy.
You know too much.
Michael, I'm serious. It's in a book.
You know too much.
That was great stuff, though.
You guys kind of changed something up yesterday where Dean Pease was up in the box. Matt Patricia was signaling the signals in from the sidelines.
Yeah.
How did that work just from an X's and O's, get the play onto the field and all that?
Yeah, it was the first time. Matt Patricia really had an expanded role this time, and him being down on the field, I think he did a great job of it. And you know, he was a calming presence out there. You think someone to be there in that situation for the first time, maybe the nerves get him a little bit, and maybe they get a little bit jumpy or anything like that. But I thought Matty P did a great job of really calming the troops down and getting the calls in, you know, talking to Coach Belichick with the communication. And you know, when Pease is down there, also it's the same way. So it's nice to see that there was no change really. There wasn't a big big difference in like, oh man, when Pease is down there it's this way and Matt's down there it's this way. I don't think it was a big change, but I think he did a great job of really keeping it consistent for us in terms of whether Pease was there or not. You know, it was still something to where we felt everything was under control.
See, I understand where it would really help Dean, I think, to see it from that angle, and I can see where there's a benefit. Is there a communications gap where, you know, if Dean wants to come to you and say, Teddy, this is what I'm seeing, this is what you're doing, or can you just get on the headphones and talk to him if you need to?
Get on the phone.
Yeah, there is that phone. Yeah. That I don't know if you – on home games, there's this row of black phones, and they're labeled in terms of – like player, like coaches' names or like defense, Patricia or something like that. If I ever want a direct line, I can always pick that up and talk up there. So that's that line of communication is always open. But in terms of the views, the sideline view compared to the view up there in the boxes, it just depends on a coach's preference. I know I don't know how they decided that Pease wanted to go upstairs this game, but whether it'll be a different aspect of it this next game versus the Steelers, we'll see. But I thought it worked well. I mean, either way, I thought it's still advantageous for us.
I'm sure there are times you don't even want to talk to those guys. Send me a text. Send me a text. I don't feel like talking right now, coach. I'll hit you back later.
Yeah, you know, some of those plays where you sort of had a screw up or something like that, and they come up to you and you know what they're going to say before you say it. You just put out your hand. It's like, I know what you're going to say. Just, yeah.
You know what would be a great feature, Teddy? A great feature, maybe even a great book. And I don't know if it's a book, but it would be a good magazine article to sit in and observe the linebackers' meetings? Because I'm sure there's some. I'm sure there's some. See, there you go. As you know,
get Comedy Central in there.
There you go. I mean, so the personality is in there. You, Vrabel, Adelis when he's healthy. Yeah. I don't know. Does he still come to meetings even if he's?
Adelis is still around. Yes, okay. Yes. Yes.
And Patricia, I'm sure there's some good conversations going on in there.
And throw in a couple youngsters in there also that keep it fresh with, you know, Crable, Guyton, and Mayo. You know, those guys, man, Vince Redd, those guys really add a little bit of spice themselves. You know, I was saying a couple weeks how they keep us all up on our pop culture with all these new songs or artists or anything like that. So I got any type of pop culture question, I'm asking them. But it's a great room. It's a great room. I mean, the young guys joke with me all the time about, man, your rookie year, I think I was like in elementary school. I was in elementary school or something like that, man. So it's fun. It's fun.
Now, when you were a rookie and you were walking in that room, is it shut up, listen, don't speak unless spoken to? Is that how you approached it when you first went there?
Pretty much with every rookie, that's the way it is at first. At first you go, and I think I was walking into Chris Slade, Willie McGinnis, Dwayne Saab, Todd Collins, Ted Johnson, or Ted's second year then. But it was something where you just, you know, speak when you're spoken to and really just get your notebook out, write notes, make sure you learn everything before you open your mouth and even ask a question, because I mean, the veterans, you don't really want to waste their time either. You know, if you're asking a question about, okay, is this tight end left here? You know, the most basic of questions when the vets are like, you know, can we get out of here? You know, so you really just try to absorb everything. And as the year goes on, I mean, we don't really suppress those guys about their individuality or, no, man, just keep quiet, keep quiet, keep quiet. Yeah. You know, we want them to be individuals themselves because, you know, to me, that's how you become a good player. I mean, if you're able to be yourself amongst the team, you know, I think as long as you teach them, get that base foundation of way we expect it to be in training camp in those early games, there comes a time where, I mean, guys, now you got to be yourself. You got to go out there and you got to get the job done because, you know, there are going to be times where I'm going to miss a tackle and I need you to have my back and I'll do the same for you.
And it's fortunate for you, Teddy, being here in New England all these years. Can you think of a situation for yourself or for anybody else? A linebacker comes in here and somebody becomes so protective, they say, well, I'm not going to help out this kid. This kid is coming in. They're trying to get him to take my job. Can you think of that happening since at any time since 1996 when you came into the league?
I can't. I think the person coming in would definitely have to show an attitude of maybe arrogance, of being conceited, about being all about himself, and not really to be part of the group, being just an individual that keeps himself separate from the backerhood, something like that. But, no, I mean, you can't be that way. That's not really being a team player. I mean, if I were to be that way with like Gary or Gerard, I think their development would have slowed a little. So I think for me to be a better player, it's to have the best players around me. And so to try to get Gerard when he's playing next to me, or try to get Gary when he's playing next to me or in for me, still doing the job that we expect them to do.
And you're probably like a coach in a sense that if you tell Gerard Mayo something or Guyton something or Red, and you see them apply it during a game, it's like, yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about 2 weeks ago, and you finally got it, and that's enjoyment for you.
Yeah, you have. I mean, I've had those moments where, you know, you try to help them out a little bit, but I think now it's I think everyone's seeing the ability of Gerard of what he can do, and he's always had that in him. He just, you know, with him and I, it's just a relationship to where if we're on the same page out there before the snap, I mean, I know this kid's going to be a great player. I know he's going to get the job done. So, and the same thing with Gary. So, you know, you want them to do good. I really want to see them do well. I mean, these two young guys are they may be the ones 3, 4, 5 years down the line.
There's a couple of teams that even though they're not in your division, it must feel like they are. Indianapolis, it seems like you're always playing them. San Diego. I think Pittsburgh's probably in that category as well, a team not in your division, but you know them pretty well by now.
Yeah, I think you get that feeling whenever, before you watch film, you anticipate what you're going to see, and you sort of expect it to be that way. So, like right after this meeting, I go in there and watch some Pittsburgh film. What I'm expecting to see is a physical offensive line. I'm expecting to see, you know, a big, strong physical quarterback also. I mean, a hard running game. Hines Ward still doing the things he's doing. So, I mean, when you know somebody that well, you can sort of anticipate those things before you click play on that avid. So I think that's nothing new now. I mean, the Steelers are who they are. You just say Pittsburgh Steelers, and you expect it's going to be a tough physical game. And I think that's the way we're built, especially defensively. And it's a game that I think we'll look forward to.
There's been some talk around the league this year that Hines Ward is a dirty player. Has that been your experience?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I respect Hines Ward. I think he's done his job for a long time. I think the only thing he does is play hard, you know, and I think maybe the guys that may think he's dirty or some of the guys that maybe he's gotten the better of or something like that. But in terms of my experiences with him, Patriots versus Steelers, I mean, he's given some over-aggressive face masks that have gone into the sideline or something like that. But, I mean, that's Pittsburgh Steeler mentality that he's trying to set. And on offense, he talk about someone being a tone setter, a receiver. I mean, him as a receiver being a tone setter is really out of the ordinary, but he can do that with the physical play, the way he blocks, the way he prides himself on blocking in the running game and, you know, get those crucial third down conversions. So, you know, I don't think it's in my place to call him a dirty player.
We appreciate the time. As always, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, guys. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
We'll see you next week. Right. Teddy Bruschi joining us, Sports Radio WEEI.